Well, Brad set it off exactly right. There is good news. The sun did rise. And it is a beautiful day, and the miracle of life does continue for most of humanity, at least for a while the sun shines on us. And there is every reason to love this world and to love each other. I'm going to have to take you for a few moments into a dark place, but I want you to remember and hold fast that essentially I come to you preaching the Unitarian version of the good news today. I understand that when we look around the world seems to be in a mess. It seems to be in a mess for several reasons. The most obvious reason is it is in a mess. But the less obvious reasons are we mostly see and pay attention to the mess, which sometimes is as it should be, as long as it doesn't drown our hopes and our energies. This is not a sermon. I want you to notice that the title is about militant fundamentalism. Fundamentalism I have no problem with. It is the militancy that is the danger and the threat, and it comes everywhere and from every brand and from every religion, and it isn't simply about Muslims or simply about Christians or simply about Jews or simply about Hindus. And yes, for those of you who have positive religious stereotypes, Buddhists do bad things too. There was actually, I'm not making this up, as the great Dave Barry said, there were actually two Buddhist monasteries in Southeast Asia that got into a fighting war over a doctrinal difference of interpretation. Human beings carry the same structure, and it is not our religions, it is what we do with our religions. Our religious views, as our political views, are Rorschach tests that we take from them what it is that we bring to them. So this is not an attack on fundamentalism. Jimmy Carter is a Christian fundamentalist who gets the fundamentals right. I will tell you later about a Muslim fundamentalist friend of mine who gets the fundamentals right, which is justice and mercy and caring and compassion. I'm talking about the militants of all faiths that just focus on the anger, on if they are right, then you are wrong. Now, look, it's easy to understand why there is a swing towards fundamentalism in the first place, and then why some go to extremes. The world is a mess. Things are not working out as people wish, as people hope. We look around and we see a war that is going on that America is heavily involved in, where we are the coalition of the coalition, and the coalition of the billing as opposed to the coalition of the willing. And whatever your feelings are about whether you should be there or not, things objectively are not going well. Human beings in Iraq and human beings from America and human beings from other countries are dying, and there doesn't seem to be a good, plausible end in sight where there are easy answers, and any major candidate is saying, let's just leave. It's a question of what kind of force and how much force and with how many. And there's a legitimate question about whether force is the answer to the problem. So we look around and there don't seem to be really clear answers, paths, and alternatives offered to us as a society. We look at our own world, our own small world in the United States, and we see that we have become increasingly isolated in the world. And if it doesn't make us stop and question ourselves and what we are doing, it's a kind of willful ignorance. When things are not going well and people are not liking you, You can assume that they are nuts and bad and evil, or you can at least ask the question, am I doing something that I could be doing differently or better? Without answering that for anyone here, it seems to me to be reasonable, if everyone around you looks like they're scared of you, to at least be introspective enough to ask, what's my role in this relationship as it seems to be deteriorating? But we don't have a lot of introspection as a society. We look at our own world, and I have to tell you, there are times when I sit and see a movie or the previews of the coming attractions and wonder what were they thinking when they decided to show all of this violence and all of this evil and have violence and destruction and evil and death as entertainment, whether that doesn't convey some slightly corrupt and corrupting message to the world. And there are times when I don't think the Taliban are right, but I understand how they came to the conclusion about the decadence of Western civilization. There are things I don't sympathize, but I kind of understand the process. We look around at a world that just doesn't seem to be perfect. We look back at a century that didn't work out the way the optimists at the turn of the 19th century thought that it would work out. The great pillars of Western culture and society were shaken and some thought pulled down by thinkers such as Darwin and Freud and Marx. Three thinkers who looked at what our human origins were and changed the picture and the paradigm from divine, from creation in a moment, changed the issues of what goes on in history from being participants at each moment to being part of a historic process in Marxist terms, an historic dialectic that was beyond really the reach of so many individuals, to the Freudian impulses that people at the turn of the last century thought were shocking. And of course, even without Fox Media being present, they only looked at the narrowest part of the mythology and thought that Freud was saying everybody has these smutty desires to commit incest with a parent. Really wasn't his point. But the establishment took these ideas and these philosophical and scientific thoughts as a threat, and they took that rightly. And as we go through our hymnals, we can see, if you pick up four of the Unitarian Universalist hymnals from over the ages, you can see the evolution of thought and of imagery and of poetry, the tremendous optimism at the change of the last century, where philosophy and science were going to be the end of hunger, of war, of oppression, that through science and industry we were going to create a utopia, a paradise, that we, with human reason, no longer slaves to those ancient mythologies that had good and evil, we would march eyes bright into a brave new world of science and reason, and man was going to be the measure of all things, and men, including women, at least by the time of Madame Curie, would be a part of this historic process and the building of a utopia. Well, if you think the 20th century worked out according to the optimists, you missed several copies of Time magazine. The 20th century, to put it mildly, was a disappointment from the get-go. Almost everything that we do and create has an upside and a downside to it, and the downside is what we tend to remember. We remember that DDT was going to wipe out all those pests that were devouring crops, and it did. And it saved lives. It saved innumerable lives. But it also left terrible consequences that were not foreseen at the time by smart and decent people. From the car solving pollution to the airplane as something of wonder and marvel to the rocket ship that gets developed for exploration but also for military uses, we use and misuse the genius of human creativity. So we look around at our world and we look at I now have 500 channels on my television and not a thing to watch that has any redeeming social value as far as I can figure out. And we go, what has this all been for? And people quite naturally have said, if we didn't do it in the 20th century, the 20th century started with wars, with Cuba, with Spain and the Philippines, if it continued with the great and terrible World War I, if it continued with World War II, the Holocaust, the loss of probably 20 million human beings in the Soviet Union, all of the losses in Southeast Asia, the horror of two atomic weapons being dropped in Japan. If this is where our genius has led us, maybe we need to reevaluate our faith in man. So the hymnal changes, even for Unitarian Universalists, and God gets replaced by man. And then later on, because man does not seem to be gender inclusive, man gets replaced by God. And so it turns. And so human beings turn from optimism to pessimism. And to slide into the kind of militant fundamentalism that we see in all faiths is psychologically understandable. There was the idea that there is absolute moral relativism does not sit well with human beings, and nor does chaos. And when intellectual and moral chaos seem to be in the world, when the world seems to be filled with nothing but anger and hatred and hostility, and we are bombarded hour after hour by news reports that bring nothing but suffering and violence and hatred and screaming and burning and explosions, wanting to retreat, wanting to go into what is psychologically called the fugue, escape this into something that is sure and certain, that doesn't have too many questions to it, is, to me, completely understandable. I remember very early my first year in the ministry, somebody calling me up and saying that they were really miserable and wanted to come in for an appointment. And at this time, I fit the stereotype of Unitarian Universalist clergy of the 60s, in that I smoked a pipe and I had a beard. She came in and said, I'm not feeling great. And I asked her, what's your problem? And she said, well, I can't get Christ in my heart. Nothing at Star King School for the Liberal Ministry prepared me to respond to that question or that observation, so I did what clergy, we were mostly male at the time, with beards and pipes did, and that is I stroked my beard, I filled my pipe, I lit my pipe, I tamped the pipe, I relit the pipe, and then I said, huh? And, I asked the Unitarian theological question, which is, what would Bob Newhart have done? Anyway, so I asked her, and she said, my friends who are fundamentalist Christians tell me that if I will take Christ into my heart, I won't be scared anymore. I won't feel lonely anymore. I'll feel accepted and loved, and everything will be fine, but it's not working for me. I understand that. I understand that. If I had a formula, if I had a transcendent experience that was life-changing and altering, somebody said, here it is. Take the wafer and your fears, your insecurities, your pains, your questions, your uncertainties, your doubts would disappear, I would give very serious consideration to taking the wafer. It's not necessarily drinking the Kool-Aid, but you can't know at the time. Can't know at the time. I knew Jim Jones. And you can't know at the time because we didn't see it coming. For those of you who don't know the Jim, or are too young for the Jim Jones reference, Jim Jones was a liberal Christian leader in San Francisco who assembled the Dream Congregation. It wasn't Unitarian Universalist, but it's what every Unitarian Universalist wanted. It was intergenerational. It was interracial. It was wonderfully integrated and social action, social gospel motivated. But eventually, he had too much power. And he took his press notices seriously and went off to Guyana and engendered a slaughter. And I have to tell you, we didn't see it coming. Not at all. But I understand the impulse of wanting certainty. I understand why it is going through Judaism, why there are settlers on the West Bank and Gaza who basically are coming up with the idea of manifest destiny. God gave this land to us. And you can't negotiate with God. I understand it. I don't support it. Because when politics becomes theological, you can't negotiate. It's very hard to negotiate for God's territory and with immutable truth. But they want to justify their suffering, and I think it's the wrong way. And I think ultimately it's a failure because they will not be able to compromise, and they who are ultra-religious will build walls and create tests that are so strict that eventually you are reduced to being a cult of one. The same is true with in militant Christianity that wants to change and wants to convert and is still sending missionaries off to the Middle East, which is pretty adverse to their own interests. And there is a reason why in fundamentalist Christianity there are no two different fundamentalist churches who agree on what's fundamental and what it means. The same problem, of course, exists in Judaism, where you have the Orthodox and the ultra-Orthodox who don't agree on what orthodoxy is, and you have the Hasidim who don't agree with anyone except their own personal rabbis. It can't work, ultimately, and the same is true of militant Muslim fundamentalists. They cannot work together. You cannot organize the chaos. The technologies that let them find each other and cooperate for a moment are also the technologies that will break them apart, because they cannot both want to wipe out 1,000 years of intellectual history and stay connected to the world with a technology that does bring the world together. And the fundamentalists who are militant of all brands have the same problem. As orthodoxy gets tighter and tighter and more restrictive, it turns brittle. And eventually, you say something that so offends me that we either part ways or one of us kills the other one. This is not a good growth plan, by the way. People have tried it from time to time, and history is that we cycle away from that. It can't win. Now, President of the United States, you're going to think I'm getting political here. I'm not. A President of the United States didn't like dissent, didn't like multiple ideas being expressed, and wanted to arrest people who criticized him. I'm speaking, of course, about one of our great presidents and one of our great Unitarian presidents, John Adams. He wanted his press critics arrested under the Alien Sedition Act. We cycle through these times of trouble and times of peril. They're not specific to a particular religion. They are not specific to a political party. They're not specific to a nation. They are specific to our times. When times are chaotic, we want certainty. When that certainty becomes too rigid, we rebel. The great and hopeful example is in Iran, where yes, the mullahs are still ruling, but the people want democracy. Not imposed democracy, not necessarily American democracy, but they want democracy. They have lived under the mullahs and the rigid fundamentalists for over 20 years, and they, thank you, have had quite enough. I have every faith and confidence that if we do not do something stupid, they will eventually win, that the people will eventually win. There's every reason for hope. There's every reason, and as a member of the media, I tell you this, to distrust the media. Not because the media is necessarily biased, though many are, but you talk about the stuff that goes wrong. You don't talk about the planes that land. You don't talk about the people that offer flowers and hugs and kisses. I got a letter from an NBC News producer talking about how biased the media coverage of the Middle East was. And absolutely, I can sign on. It's absolutely biased. Which way? Depends. Al Jazeera, Fox News, two extremes. Fox is crazy pro-Israel, and this is coming from a Zionist. Al Jazeera is not necessarily fair and balanced on the Arab side of the question. New York Times has a bias that is pro-Israeli. LA Times, I think, a slight bias that is pro-Palestinian. Why is there bias? Why is there bias in reporting? Well, a couple of easy reasons. One, pictures. You have to feel for people who are blown up in pizza parlors. You have to feel against people who seem to be dancing and burning flags when buildings in 9/11 come down. But that is such a tiny, non-representational picture of the humanity that lives there. We don't have pictures of planes landing and people hugging. This is going to sound like a setup to a joke. I wish I had a joke that could fit the setup, but it's not. This last Thursday, I moderated a panel with a Lutheran, a priest, and an imam. And it was wonderful, and it was beautiful, and it was the way the world and discourse should be, can be, and can mostly be relatively easily. Oh, and all of this was at the University of Judaism. So, I mean, you can start the setup with, and the mom walks into the University of Judaism. It was a wonderful experience. There was no press. If we had been standing in the parking lot and yelling, there would have been helicopters above. If the imam had been burning an Israeli flag, if I had been burning a Palestinian flag, if the Lutheran had been saying, "He who doesn't come to the Father is damned to hell," if the priest had been yelling and screaming, we would have had every network there. But human beings acting like decent human beings isn't a story, and that's wrong because that is the greater human story. The greater human story is that most human beings of all faiths are decent, whether they are liberal faiths, conservative faiths, fundamental faiths. It is the militant that I qualify. Most are good and decent and kind. but we don't know about them, and not knowing about them prejudices our perception of people who are different. All of the reports and seeing people dancing and burning and throwing and bombing and dying prejudices our experience of how we meet and see and understand and misunderstand people who are different from ourselves. Because the truth is, they are not so different. Their skies too are blue, and they too love their children, and they too would rather live in a world of peace and not a world of hatred. The difference between optimism and pessimism doesn't go by religion either. There are apocalyptic Christians that are saying the world is going to end and Jesus is going to come down in the great act of urban renewal and wipe everything out. There are apocalyptic liberals who say the world is doomed and going to hell and we can't prevent it because there is war and there is pollution and there is science run amok and the world is ending, and they stand at the extremes shouting at each other, but they both believe in the essential fact that the world is doomed. I don't. I believe that the world is savable. What we do, what we choose makes a difference, and what we do and with whom we do it doesn't have to depend on race, religion, or creed. It is decent people forming alliances to make a difference. Once upon a time, in a more optimistic age, people said, you know, just a little bit of milk is all it takes to change the color of the coffee, and just a couple of us can make such a good difference. Today, in an age of more pessimism, people say, you know, it's just a little milk that you put in there and it changes all of the coffee. It's true. Just a little bit of bad gets all the press, and the hope has a difficult time making it to the coverage, making it to our eyes, making it to our hearts. But know that it is there. There are more people who care, who are involved, who are good, and who are decent than you will ever learn about reading our papers and watching our news. And we sometimes just have to be a little brave to be open to encounter the stranger, the apparently different, the other, and embrace them into our lives, because together we make each other and the world a much better place. And good will, in the long run, triumph over evil, and love, at least for a while, can triumph over hatred and fear, and all of us have a role to play.